Good morning and welcome to Friday Forum. I'm Spencer Michaels. Coming up, a look at the importance and the intricacy of a killing that has captured Bay Area headlines for almost 2 years. This week, a grand jury in Alameda County indicted for murder the leader of Your Black Muslim Bakery, Yusef Bey IV. The victim was an East Bay journalist, Chauncey Bailey, who from most accounts had delved into the workings of that bakery and its young leader and was about to expose them. We'll recap the case, which has become a cause celebre for many Bay Area journalists, and try to explain who the players are and what's at stake and whether the Oakland Police Department handled the case correctly. You can join us with questions and comments. It's all ahead on Forum right after this. Good morning. This is Friday Forum. I'm Spencer Michaels. The indictment this week for murder of Yusef Bey IV, the head of the now-defunct Your Black Muslim Bakery, comes nearly 2 years after journalist Chauncey Bailey was killed. That was in August 2007, when Bailey of the Oakland Post was walking to work in downtown Oakland and was hit by 3 shotgun blasts. Bailey was investigating the bakery and its leadership. Police soon arrested 21-year-old Devondra Broussard, who allegedly did the actual shooting. But he later implicated Bey IV as ordering the killings. It's a tangled tale that isn't over yet, involving an African-American self-help group with suspicious ambitions, a journalist who apparently died for doing what journalists are supposed to do, find out what's going on, and a police department that finds itself under fire. We're going to talk about the case this hour with Thomas Peel, investigative reporter for the Bay Area News Group and a participant in the Chauncey Bailey Project, a collaboration of media outlets, which includes KQED, formed to continue Bailey's work and answer questions regarding his death. Welcome to Forum, Thomas.
Good morning. Thank you.
Martin Reynolds is the editor of the Oakland Tribune, and he's a participant in the Chauncey Bailey Project. He's been watching the whole thing. Good morning to you, Martin.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Peter Keene is with us as well, the Dean Emeritus and now a professor of law at Golden Gate University Law School and the former Chief Assistant Public Defender for San Francisco for a very long time. Good morning to you, Peter.
Good morning, Spencer.
Okay, so the hot news today is, I guess it's hot, is that revelations that the Oakland PD made a mistake by assigning a sergeant named Darwin Longmire to investigate this case when he was friends with Yusef Bey IV. Is that important? Does that tell us anything new that we didn't know about this case before, Thomas?
Well, what is new in that, Spencer, is the Oakland Police Department is now acknowledging that Sergeant Longmire was not the right pick to investigate Chauncey Bailey's murder. Acting Police Chief Howard Jordan said that yesterday. It's now a bit of a ferocious backpedal from earlier statements that the police made that Sergeant Longmire had done nothing wrong. They came out with a statement several months ago before the internal affairs investigation of Sergeant Longmire was concluded saying everything is fine with this case. We now know that that everything was not fine with this case.
Incidentally, we did ask the Oakland Police Department to be on the show with us, and they said, sorry, no one from the department is commenting on the case right now. It involves personnel matters, and we're not allowed to do that. We also asked the deputy district attorney, Chris Lamiero, and he wouldn't come on the story either. It's a pending case and remains an ongoing investigation, so it wouldn't be appropriate to comment, he said. So anyway, so this development with the Oakland Police Department, does that say anything really important? I mean, here's one murder that happened almost 2 years ago, and we're talking about it, and everybody's still talking about it. Does this make the case somewhat wider? Does this cast suspicion on the Oakland Police Department for dropping the ball, Martin Reynolds?
Well, I think the Oakland Police Department has some serious systemic problems, and many of those have come out. Partly one of those in particular that came to light in part due to some of the Chauncey Bailey investigation was warrants that were documents that were false information was put on affidavits to obtain search warrants to then bust low-level drug dealers in East Oakland. And since that whole thing broke about a few months ago, 4 officers have been fired as a result. 11 were under suspicion. 7 were confirmed this or put back into the mix and will not be fired. But four were fired. And there have been many other issues, problems related to the department. It's a dysfunctional department without a doubt. And I wouldn't say that this necessarily casts any additional suspicion. It just further shows that the level of problems that are going on in the Oakland Police Department need to be addressed.
But the implication of the department assigning a man who is friends with a suspect to investigate the suspect makes you wonder, I would think, as to what their motives are. Why would they do that? Is there anything more nefarious than incompetence?
I don't think that that remains to be seen. But I think what we're finding more so than anything is a real leadership vacuum within the department. Obviously, the chief just stepped down. Chief Tucker stepped down because citing sort of irreconcilable differences with the city council. And so I think a lot of it has to do with a lack of leadership and maybe the left hand knowing what the right is doing. And I don't know that – is it safe to say, Thomas, that he was friends with Bay or that they had a relationship?
They had a relationship. I think it's safe to say that they had some type of friendship. Two lawyers for Bayforth have said that Longmire served as a mentor for the young man. Youssef Bay IV assumed leadership of this organization when his brother Antar Bay was killed in 2005. He was 20 years old. Youssef Bay IV was 20 years old. He was placed in charge of this organization with the title of chief executive officer. He had no business experience.
It's amazing. He's only 23 now, right?
That's correct.
That's incredible. That this guy is running this whole outfit, huh?
Well, you know, it was founded by his father, a man who called himself Dr. Youssef Bey, and it was passed on to the sons upon his death, and with the murder of his brother, he assumed control of the organization.
Let's step back just a little bit and bring Peter Keene into this, professor at Golden Gate University Law School. You've been watching this case. Give us a quick little overview of why this is important. Why are we talking about this 2 years later?
I think an overview is crucial, Spencer, because this is not just a murder. It was an assassination of an American journalist, something rather extraordinary. I mean, we see journalists being assassinated in Russia or in Iraq on a common basis, but it doesn't happen in the United States. It's when an American journalist is investigating a particular type of criminal activity, this black Muslim bakery over in Oakland. And then what happens is that the Oakland Police Department, through either incompetence or corruption or a combination of both, just closes the books within a very short time in regard to this little fish, Broussard, when it's clear that the bakery and Bay the Fourth and this group are behind it. And
you say it's clear, but I'm sure the Oakland Tribune wouldn't have said – I mean, excuse me, the Oakland Police Department wouldn't have said it was clear at that point.
They should have, just by an overview of any of the evidence that they saw, that this Broussard was just some little fish whose strings were being jerked around by the head of the bakery, Bay the Fourth. They had all sorts of indications of that right from the beginning in terms of the reports they had, in terms of even a videotape that they had of a discussion that took place in a holding cell. However, the Sergeant Longmire, who was the investigator, had this close relationship with the bakery and with Bay the Fourth and the father, as did many other Oakland politicians and other people in Oakland. The bakery itself sort of had a mini People's Temple type effect in Oakland over the course of the last 30 years, and you can almost see a mini Jim Jones in regard to the father.
It's funny. Let's stop there for a minute and explore that a little bit. That was something that had occurred to me, that this sounded like Jim Jones. But does your black Muslim bakery, Thomas Peel, Did it have that kind of an appeal? Were there lots of people who were involved with it and kind of worshipped it? Or did people go in there to buy bread?
Well, both, Spencer. This organization was really a splinter group from the Nation of Islam. It was its own sect. Youssef Bey the Elder broke this organization away from the Nation of Islam in the 1970s. He built it into a small polygamous society. He fathered more than 40 children by more than a dozen women, some of them as young as 13 years old. he clearly intended to spread his seed far and wide and build this organization with both his biological offspring and dozens of young men that he adopted as his so-called spiritual sons and brought into this organization, trained them as foot soldiers in his own personal vigilante army.
So what I've read was that it wasn't precisely the Nation of Islam, but it was an offshoot of something called the Moorish Science Temple from Newark, New Jersey, which started in 31.
Reported that sort of its roots in this organization due date to the Moorish Science Temple founded by a man named Noble Drew Ali in Newark, New Jersey, who suggested that his followers take the name Bay. It was a forerunner to the Nation of Islam. The founder of the Nation of Islam, W.D. Ford, at one point claimed to be the Noble Drew Ali incarnate. And he it all kind of morphed into what became the Nation of Islam under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who was a mentor of Yusuf Bey.
So what do you think, and what does anybody here think, the ultimate, if there was one, an ultimate goal of Yusuf Bey IV was? Was he acting ideologically, or was he acting for his personal aggrandizement?
He was a thug, and he was running a criminal family that had been passed to him by the death of his grandfather, a young, not too intelligent, rather bravado talking thug who had these other characters around him who were mainly doing criminal activities. They trashed a bunch of businesses a few years back, and they felt that they could operate with a fair degree of impunity. And they had been doing that up until the time of the killing of Chauncey Bailey and even for some time after that.
That's Peter Keene. Martin Reynolds, the editor of the Oakland Tribune, how much of this was known? How much did the Oakland Tribune, for example, know about your black Muslim bakery, and was it investigating the situation?
Well, it had quite a bit had been reported. I mean, we had been looking at, certainly when these criminal allegations at one time before the patriarch, Yusuf Bey, died of cancer a few years back, he was up on charges of rape, and that obviously didn't get fully adjudicated because he died during trial. But this has been dating back to quite some time, and the bakery had also, and members of it, have been a player in the political sphere of Oakland for many years. Some had a couple people associated with it had run for city council. Money had been given to members of the organization to run a health organization, EM Health. That money was never paid back. And I think that it all reflected that there was a time when African-Americans in Oakland felt very disempowered and disenfranchised. And the bakery was really a symbol of that empowerment. And so it stepped up and was involved in the political of Oakland and was able to sort of, in many ways, pressure the politicians to support it because it was doing these good works within the community.
Well, who were the politicians? Was Jerry Brown the mayor of Oakland when the
Well, it really dated back even further towards the era of Elihu Harris. Mm-hmm. And there have been other council members that have been on the council for quite some time. So it's certainly changed over since then. But there are people that are on the council today that were involved then.
I remember, since we mentioned the Jim Jones parallel, I mean, Jones would ingratiate himself to politicians by bringing crowds to speeches and helping the politicians. He had some power. Did Bey have that kind of power?
He did have that kind of power. And I recall at one time there was a reaction to violence, and a group of pastors and ministers got together actually at McClyman's High School. And it was in response to this increased violence within the community. And so there were ministers such as J. Alfred Smith and many others from a very vibrant and activist religious community within Oakland. And at that time, Bey, the senior Bey, had just gotten put up on charges. And so he comes into this auditorium at that time and actually was given a standing ovation because it was sort of viewed as, he being persecuted by the system. I'm sure that all of these people now, as all of this information has come to light, would certainly scurry away at the notion that they actually clapped for this man. But he definitely had that kind of persona and respect. He would walk through with a phalanx of, you know, bow tie clad young men in, you know, cars with big rims. And they came, they made an impression when they entered. So they, and that impression permeated throughout the community.
Peter Keene, do you think this was specifically an Oakland phenomenon, or did it slop over into the rest of the Bay Area?
I don't think it was something that went beyond Oakland. Oakland was sort of a fiefdom for this group, and as a result of that, the kind of ties that developed between Oakland politicians and the idea that they had to give some fealty to this group because this group had political power. But even more disturbingly, the ties that police officers gave to the group, that somehow they had to protect it, even cover up, help them out, collaborate with them.
You got certainly a clue as to why?
I don't know the motive, whether the motive was just benevolence towards them or there was some other type of corruption involved. But clearly, you had that on behalf of Sergeant Longmire. He was very much a patron of this group, someone who took care of them in the criminal justice system, and pretty much closed the door on the investigation after Devondre Broussard had taken the fall. And had it not been for this group of reporters in the Chauncey Bailey Project, that's where the real story lies.
Right, and I'm
had they not
that
come forward and taken this on their own, none of these indictments would have come forth. The Oakland Police Department, the Alameda County District Attorney's Office just sort of put it to bed. We got a guy. It's over. We don't want to hear about it until these gentlemen put all sorts of pressure on them with their stories.
So, Thomas Peel, what did you do, and how important do you think the actions of the group were in terms of turning around the police department? We don't see that too often.
Well, I'll talk about what we did, Spencer. We were fortunate enough to acquire a great deal of documentation about how the Oakland Police Department and Sergeant Longmire investigated the killing of Chauncey Bailey. Police said early on that Devondre Broussard, a then 19-year-old dishwasher at the bakery, didn't act alone in hunting Chauncey Bailey down and blowing him away with a 12-gauge shotgun. But we didn't see a lot of follow-up regarding the conspiracy. There was an obvious conspiracy, an order given, go and kill this guy. And
but he didn't say that at first,
Broussard. No, Broussard did not say that at first.
So however, why do you say it was obvious?
Because if you listen to and read Broussard's confession, if you listen to taped conversations between Derwin Longmire and Yousef Bey, the fourth, the day after Chauncey Bailey was killed, if you listen to recordings of Yousef Bey, the fourth, being interrogated by inspectors from the Alameda County District Attorney's Office, it is incredibly obvious that the full story was not coming out, yet there wasn't a lot of pressure to get to it. It was like, we've got the guy who pulled the trigger, and there was not a lot of aggression in getting to the what was behind it, the conspiracy to kill Mr. Bailey, the order given to go and do this.
So I don't want to ask a reporter to reveal his secret sources, but I will. How did you find this out? How did you know? Did they share the jailhouse conversations, the tapes
all I can say is we were able to acquire a great deal of documentation and recordings and video recordings that were related to this case.
And after listening to that and looking at the Oakland Police Department and how they acted, and I think the Oakland political structure has to be thrown into this as well, I mean, what do you conclude? What do you think was going on? Why didn't that – it's almost 2 years before this indictment that just came down this week.
That's right. Mr. Bailey was killed 20 months ago tomorrow. And the indictment that now makes public – and brings everything full circle to the obvious fact that a conspiracy was at play to kill him, that Yousef Bey the Fourth told two of his minions, do your homework on this guy, take him out, kill him before he publishes a story in the Oakland Post. And you know, a little icing on the cake, he told Devondre Broussard, according to a statement Broussard gave to prosecutors, make sure he's dead. Shoot him three times. The police department appeared very much not to be interested in investigating this case beyond the fact that they obtained an early confession from the trigger man.
If this were Mexico or wherever other countries that Peter mentioned, the reason for not going forward would be fear. Mm-hmm. It would be, we'll get killed if we keep going with this thing. Do you think that played any role in this?
No, I don't think there was any fear about the fact that the Muslim bakery was so powerful that if police probed into the conspiracy involving Yousef Bey the Fourth to kill Chauncey Bailey, that their lives would have been in danger. No, I don't think that at all. I think that there was a level of
indifference,
as Morton says. I think that there was Morton talked earlier about systemic problems within the Oakland Police Department. The Oakland Police Department has 10 homicide investigators. It's got more than 30 internal affairs investigators. In other words, there's more police in Oakland assigned to investigate the police than there are to investigate homicides. Very cynically, you
can
say—
And there are a lot of homicides, too. So these guys are probably—
Incredibly overworked.
Yeah.
The homicide unit of the Oakland Police Department is incredibly overworked. And you can be cynical and say that they don't get a double clearance, any additional statistics for arresting more than one person for one murder. So they had the guy who says, yeah, I shot him. I did it. Okay, you got me. And beyond that, there was not a lot of interest in pursuing the case to its intellectually honest ends of wrapping in other people involved in the conspiracy.
Martin Reynolds, the Oakland Tribune, when you use the word indifference, I mean that could be a loaded word. I mean, are you talking about, well, this is in the black community and so we're
no,
just
I wouldn't
let it
say
go?
It's so much. I wouldn't say it's that. No, I think that would be unfair to say that homicide investigators don't care about the job they do. I don't think that's accurate. I think it has more to do with the fact that, as Thomas alluded to, that there is so much. They got a guy. It's time to move on. And, you know, because the department, we did a story earlier. Mary Fricker did a story about the level of caseload that these investigators have. And so in order to sort of keep things rolling, they need to they didn't want to necessarily pursue this. And I think this is a problem that has more to do with the history of the department. It really dates back to the Ryder scandal, where a group of rogue officers on a dog watch in West Oakland were accused of assaulting and individuals filing falsified police reports, so on and so forth. Now, none of them were convicted of that, but out of that came the Ryder settlement, a negotiated settlement agreement that essentially required that the Oakland Police Department conduct a numerous reforms. And as a result of that, one of those reforms has resulted in a considerably more robust internal affairs division and not enough investigators on the street.
So there are a lot of questions here. I mean, one question is, what happened to the mayor? I mean, you would think that he would have gotten involved in all this.
Well, you know, to an extent—
Short answer.
He did. After we reported in November, or I'm sorry, late October, that a great deal of evidence pointing to the conspiracy to kill Mr. Bailey was not followed up upon by the police department, then Mayor Dellums came public and asked for an internal— the state to aid the Internal Affairs Division in investigating how the case was handled.
All right. So there's a lot of questions here, and we'll get into them. We're talking with Thomas Peel from the Bay Area News Group, Martin Reynolds, the editor of the Oakland Tribune, and Peter Keene, who's at Golden Gate University Law School and a former public defender. And we're talking about the Chauncey Bailey case. You can join us in just a few minutes. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. I'm Spencer Michaels, and this is Forum from KQED-FM. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Spencer Michaels, and we're talking this hour about the Chauncey Bailey murder and the indictment of Yousef Bey the Fourth for that murder just this week. We want to hear from you on this story. You can talk to our group. The phone number is 866-733-6786. That's a toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. We're talking with Thomas Peel, who's the investigative reporter for the Bay Area News Group, Martin Reynolds, the editor of the Oakland Tribune, and Peter Keene from Golden Gate University Law School, former public defender, chief assistant public defender. It sounds as though if it wasn't for you folks and this Chauncey Bailey group that investigated this, maybe Broussard would still be the only suspect. Do you think that's true?
Well, I think that's a fair one doesn't like to sort of overstate things, but I think it's definitely safe to say that without pushing, without the reporting that went on within the Bay Area, and certainly the Chauncey Bailey Project led that reporting. We weren't the only ones to do some good reporting early on. The San Francisco Chronicle also did some stories that helped push this issue forward.
And they still are.
And they still are. Yeah. So I think that, you know, and we have also many partners involved in the Bailey Project as well that have helped to sort of spread this message and to continue to apply pressure.
The message is?
Well, the message is that you can kill the messenger, but you won't kill the message. And it was very important that the journalistic community, brought together by Sandy Close of New America Media and Dory Maynard of the Maynard Institute for Journalism Education, brought a group of journalists together at that very first meeting a few days after Chauncey was killed.
Okay, so I know the answer to the next question, but I think I have to ask it. Are you saying, all of you, that this murder is more important and deserves more police work on it than the large number of homicides in Oakland, many of which are drug-related? Thomas Peel, what do you think?
Spencer, this was a First Amendment issue. It's a First Amendment issue from the moment that Mr. Bailey was killed. He was killed to silence him. And there is precedent in the journalistic community for the formation of a group of reporters to work a story like this. We all know that in 1976, an Arizona Republic investigative reporter named Don Bowles died in a car bombing.
Right.
And a group of reporters from all around the country, led by the great Bob Green of Newsday, descended upon Phoenix to finish the story that Bowles was working on about fraudulent land deals, city leaders, and the mafia. So we had a precedent when we did this. And we followed that. And to us from the beginning, this was about the fact that Mr. Bailey was killed to stop a newspaper story, and we could not stand for that.
And Peter Keene, you've defended a lot of alleged criminals. Do you buy that theory?
Well, it's clearly not correct to say that one life is worth more than another life, but there was more involved here than just the killing of one person, and Tom was correct. In terms of the killing of a journalist who is engaged in investigation of something going to the heart of criminal activity and other types of corruption, you strike at the heart of the democratic process in the United States. You strike at the First Amendment. You strike at the ability of the people to get information relating to all sorts of improper things. So yes, I think in any other police department, there would have been a ton of resources thrown at this. The district attorney's office, as opposed to the Alameda County District Attorney's Office, would have been much more keyed up because it transcended Chauncey Bailey as an individual in regard to what he represented. But the thing was treated just as if it was some sort of low-level drug killing that happened in some bar at 3 in the morning. That's what was one of the most extraordinary aspects of it.
All right. Let's take some telephone calls. Troy in Oakland. Good morning. You're on Forum.
Hi. I heard a couple of things that sort of rubbed me the wrong way. First off, I heard someone mention that the police didn't follow the investigation to its intellectually honest end, and I would say the police never do that. But my main point I wanted to make is that I've gone to the Black Muslim Bakery several times, one, to buy their good food, but also to attend the meetings. And they were always pro-Black, business-oriented, uplift the community type of gatherings versus a Jim Jones sort of thing that you guys seem to allude to. That's how it was. I just wanted to throw that out there, that it was always a positive thing and just very much community-oriented, business-minded, and all about uplifting the Black community.
Well, Troy, are you saying that maybe maybe they weren't such a bad organization because they ran a good bakery and employed a lot.
Actually, I don't think that, because I did have a very negative view of them, actually, because of the religious side of it, and I'm just very much against that following along with any sort of religious organization vehemently the way that they did. But I have lots of friends that I grew up with that were following down a very negative road. And once they became involved with the Black Muslim Bakery, they straightened up.
Interesting.
They're clean. And all right. I still know them now, and they're still doing great.
All right. That's an interesting perspective. Thank you very much, Troy. Let's take another call here from Therese in San Francisco.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I first want to commend the Chauncey Bailey Project people that are involved on a very good job, because so often you hear about cases where the police may have been negligent or did not do as thorough job as they probably should have, and it just kind of gets swept under the rug. And after a while, you just kind of forget about it and you don't hear about it, so it's done with and they're cleared. It was clear that there was some police wrongdoing here, and it goes farther up, I think, the chain of command than just Longmire. Someone had to okay him for, you know, to be assigned to this case. So it goes further back, and I really think it's a wonderful job that they've done to show the police are not always right. We are here; they are still human, and they can make mistakes just like anyone else. And it's great that they brought this to the forefront because it needed to be seen.
All right, Therese, thank you very much. The concept of coming down hard on the police, Thomas Peel, you hear that especially in regard to this case. Is that a healthy thing, do you think?
The police are public servants. A police department is, at its core, really another function of government in which journalistic scrutiny should apply. I mean, the police are not immune from having – or should not be immune from reporters aggressively poking around and getting to the bottom of things.
How have the police been in terms of your investigation of this case?
They have been extremely critical of it. The police, before any findings were made public concerning the investigation of Sergeant Longmire, issued a statement saying he had done nothing wrong. That really doesn't make a lot of sense when you've got someone under investigation and you're prejudging that investigation and issuing statements about it before it's concluded.
Now, they changed that tone or yesterday.
That tone has now been changed, but you have to question – why statements were put out while an investigation was ongoing.
Incidentally, I'll repeat what I said earlier. We did try to get somebody from the Oakland Police Department on forum today, but they said nobody can comment on the case right now. It involves personnel matters and we're not allowed to. So the information you got, Thomas, was essentially not from the police department, sounds as though, like, because they weren't cooperating too much.
The police department did not cooperate with us at all. They wouldn't. They very rarely would take and answer any questions involving the Bailey case or how it was investigated.
Okay. Now we'll take a call from Melissa in Sacramento. Hi, Melissa. You're on forum.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My name is Melissa Nix, and I'm a journalist. I also happen to be the ex-girlfriend of a French and American citizen who was murdered in San Francisco, Loop de la Plaza, almost 2 years ago. It'll be 2 years on June 2nd. I'd like to, you know, say that there's a systemic problem across the Bay in San Francisco in terms of, you know, adequate investigations. Homicide is understaffed, but there's also, you know, a lack of leadership to actually properly staff homicide and also to, you know, hold those accountable who don't properly investigate murder investigations. Hugues was actually a French and American. Almost a year later, the Department of Justice allowed for the French government to assign their own detectives to the case, and they ruled it out 100% homicide. In the meantime, the San Francisco Police Department refuses to call it anything but an undetermined death. They really tried to, in the initial days, sort of sweep it under the carpet. I got that comment from a San Francisco Chronicle reporter who said, "I don't report on suicides." They initially tried to portray it as a suicide. And I think it was because they have, you know, skyrocketing statistics of murders. Okay. 2007 was a 15-year high.
Well, you bring up an important point, I think, and I think we should talk about it a little bit, which is the whole concept of you know, how do you get the police department to be interested in your case and in cases like that when they are generally overburdened? You've been around journalism for a long time, Martin Reynolds. What do you think?
Well, I think one of the reasons Chief Tucker stepped down, as I mentioned earlier, was
Oakland
because
Police
Oakland Police Chief Chief Tucker stepped down. It had a lot to do with the fact that and many, I think, in the department feel that they are not given the kind of resources they need to fully be the kind of department they can robustly investigate these crimes.
Is this a generic comment, you think, that applies throughout the years, the centuries, the decades? Or is this because we're in a tough economic time right now?
Well, I mean, Oakland has been a community that has been afflicted with these kinds of challenges for a long time. And the homicide rate goes up, it goes down. At the Tribune, we do a lot of coverage on this issue of violence within the community. But I think that it's also important to note that I don't think the police can be expected to be the ones to solve the problem of why people are killing each other. I mean, I know we're piling on the police here, but I think this is a much more of a societal issue and one that we have to stop the reason that people are killing each other. I mean, this is sort of going off on a different direction, but I think it's important to note that the police cannot stop folks from killing each other. And we need to as a community, the community needs to come together and figure out how to solve that in the long term.
Well, Peter Keene, in all your years with the Public Defender's Office in San Francisco, did you feel you were on the opposite side from the police?
Well, I was also a San Francisco police commissioner. So I served as
someone. All right, so what is your take on all this?
Well, my take on it is that there are always difficulties in regard to police department funding, and there's always difficulty in regard to police department talent or lack of talent in following up of an investigation. And in regard to the lady who just spoke, she spoke about something very disturbing. But I can look at my experience with the San Francisco Police Department going back almost 40 years and reading many investigations, being involved in many homicides, and also as my time on the police commission, and compare it with my analysis of what was done by the Oakland Police Department in regard to this case. And there's no comparison. This was dreadful, not just indifference, incompetence at best. The corruption involved with Longmire and those associations. But this is not the kind of investigation. Put aside even the journalist aspect of someone being killed. This was a real Bush League type of investigation that was done by the Oakland Police Department.
You know,
the materials that Tom talked about that he got from other people, which he showed to me early on, these were materials that were all available to the Oakland Police Department. They knew about them. Anyone who looked at them would have seen right away what was going on, and there would have been an indictment a long time ago.
So I'm listening to all of you, and I'm thinking this is not just indifference. This is not just overwork. We've got too many homicides. It couldn't be.
It's not.
What you're saying, it sounds like it's something else. Thomas Peel, any motivation for the Oakland Police Department not to investigate this further? I mean, it's obviously a First Amendment case. It's killing a journalist who's trying to get a story. This isn't just any case.
Spencer, Youssef Bey IV has been recorded or was recorded on a videotape made clandestinely in an unrelated case in which he bragged to two of his followers that Sergeant Longmire was protecting him from charges, that Sergeant Longmire respected the bakery and didn't want to see it collapse and go down because Youssef Bey IV would be implicated in Chauncey Bailey's murder, or implicating Youssef Bey IV in Chauncey Bailey's murder would destroy the bakery. So there seemed to be a wink and a nod that Devondre Broussard would be the fall guy. Youssef Bey IV told Longmire that Broussard killed Bailey and helped Longmire convince Broussard to confess and to say that he acted alone.
Well, remember our caller a few minutes ago, I think Troy, or whoever it was saying this is a
this was a pretty good organization. It helped a lot of people. Not only did it provide good bakery goods, but it took some folks off the street. It gave them jobs and so forth. You think any of that is involved in not prosecuting?
I think that
this is Martin Reynolds of the Oakland Tribune.
Yeah, I think that there were parts of what the bakery represented that were very powerful and important to people within the black community. It was a community that felt very disenfranchised for a lot of time, particularly as it relates to the political process. And there were people who went to the bakery to seek jobs, to get support, and to find some sort of a direction. And I think that despite what was going on behind the scenes, I think that there are some of those, there are people out there who would say, hey, I went there, I got something out of it. I think that's accurate to say. That doesn't excuse what obviously happened since then. But I think we would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge that reality for some people.
All right. Let's take a couple more phone calls. Fascinating story here. We'll take a call from Marcel in Santa Rosa. Hello, Marcel. You're on farm.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. The lady journalist who spoke just a few minutes ago summed it up, cover-up. That's the name of the game. I lived in San Francisco in 73 when the zebra killings were going on. I was married then, and we were totally terrified. Can you hear me?
Oh, we hear you fine.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Okay. I and several friends definitely thought that there was something behind, you know, it was much deeper than a few, you know, black people killing white people. We felt there was definitely a conspiracy. And this was covered up just like everything else. You know, they got a few guys, they put them in jail, that was it. And I personally think that this latest killing of Bailey, I think it's connected, and I'd like to get some comments on this. I don't know if the speakers.
Well, actually, Tom Peel does want to comment on
okay.
it, so I'm going to let him. Thanks for your call.
Okay.
Go ahead, Tom.
Ironically enough, the zebra killings have come up in this investigation. Devondre Broussard, when he agreed to turn state's witness in this case, described the killing of a man named Michael Wills.
Before we go on, just briefly, a couple of sentences. The zebra killings?
The zebra killings were essentially hate crimes in San Francisco in the early 70s where blacks hunted down and killed whites. In this instance, Devondre Broussard has told prosecutors and told the grand jury that a man named Antoine Mackey, his confederate at the bakery, the man who was drove him to the killing of Chauncey Bailey, ran into the bakery in early July of 2007 and announced loudly that he had just killed a, quote, devil. Devondre Broussard says he put on jogging clothes and ran out to the scene where he saw the body of Mr. Wills, where Antoine Mackey had allegedly shot him in the head with an AK-47.
Mr. Wills?
Mr. Wills was the victim, Michael
right.
Wills.
Okay.
A random victim, a white man who was shot. And I only bring up his race because Antoine Mackey says that he was killed because he was white, that Antoine Mackey told Devondre Broussard that he and Youssef Bey were driving around. They happened to be discussing the zebra killings. Youssef Bey has said in numerous jail phone calls that he is essentially a racial supremacist. He saw Mr. Wills, Mr. Mackey had an assault rifle, according to Broussard. Mackey was told, go kill that devil. Mackey then allegedly shot Mr. Wills in the head.
All right. So you say racial supremacist, the whole influence of the history of the Nation of Islam. Peter Keene earlier said these guys are thugs.
That's right. I think you got a background here of the whole black Muslim movement, the Nation of Islam and all that. But this was really a renegade group. And in terms of them being part of any kind of legitimate Nation of Islam, black Muslim movement in the last few years at least, that wasn't the case. These were criminals, pure and simple, who were engaged in criminal activities. They were violent. Their whole thing was domination, power. They were indeed black, but you listen to them, they're not coming at this from any kind of black ideology. They're coming at it from some
sort
of—
Malcolm X was murdered for black ideology by thugs. It's,
yeah, but this group was more sort of a homegrown Tony Soprano type of operation. That you could equate it more to that than any kind of, I think, either racial or ideological thing that was motivating them or pushing them in regard to the main things that they were involved in. You had the general overview of the Nation of Israel and the Islam and the Black Muslim movement, but I think at the point that these guys have been doing it in the last few years, it was a very thin veneer.
Well, they did. Peter's Thomas correct Peel. To call them punks. And Devondre Brassard told prosecutors that they drew much of their inspiration from watching mafia movies.
Huh.
He said when Youssef Bey IV told him to, quote, take out Chauncey Bailey, they'd watched enough mafia movies that he knew what take out meant.
So we asked this earlier, but ultimate goal, I mean, if you're a thug, if you're Tony Soprano, the idea is to build up a lot of wealth and spread it around your compatriots. Is that what's going on here?
Yes.
Is this a power grab?
It's a power grab. It was an absolute power grab. Youssef Bey IV was drunk on his and on the perception that he had a lot of power. And he ordered people killed. According to Devondre Brassard, he kept a hit list on a clipboard of people that he wanted eliminated. They were either going to pay him money or they were going to go. In his phraseology.
And in fact,
is Martin Reynolds.
He had said, as an enticement, said that he would help Mackey and Broussard get falsified credit reports so that they could get loans that they would never have to pay back.
Wow. All right. Time for another telephone call here. Catherine in Forestville. Hi, you're on Forum.
Hi. Hello. The investigative journalist Chris Thompson of the East Bay Express wrote an earlier expose of your Black Muslim Bakery. I don't know if you all remember that.
Yeah.
And he received death threats, and the Oakland police at that time told him that he should hide out, and he did. He hid out in Central California, and he has since moved to New York City. And I'm curious, was this same Sergeant Longmire involved in protecting your Black Muslim Bakery at the time of the Chris Thompson death threats? And is this being investigated as part of the Oakland PD investigation into the Chauncey Bailey murder?
Catherine, how long ago was that? Were we talking two, 3 years?
It was a couple of years before the Chauncey Bailey murder.
So about 4 years ago.
Yeah. I don't know. We don't have any information that Longmire had anything to do with that then. But, yeah, I mean, Chris Thompson wrote a very good expose about the bakery early on. I don't know that we could say that they were in any way connected.
Well, what I'm asking is, he received recommendations from the police department telling him to leave town.
Mm-hmm.
Has anyone
right.
contacted him about that?
We've talked to him. He discussed that in a 60 Minutes piece about the Bailey murder. And quite frankly, he deserves a huge amount of credit for being the one journalist in the Bay Area long before Chauncey Bailey was killed who aggressively reported on the criminal activities of your Black Muslim Bakery. He was ahead of all of us on that.
Okay, Catherine, thanks for your call. The whole concept of the Chauncey Bailey Project, excuse me, is this project like funded? Is it a formal project? Go ahead.
Well, it's really, and as I mentioned before, we were brought together by Sandy Close from New American Media and Dory Maynard of the Maynard Institute, and to sort of talk about what are we going to do to carry on Chauncey's name. And it was decided at that time, and there was a whole group of people. There were people from the philanthropic community, UC Berkeley at the time, a graduate school of journalism. And so we all came together at this early meeting, later joined by Robert Rosenthal of the Center for Investigative Reporting. And so this group of radio, television journalists, and it was a pretty tense couple of meetings because you sort of have people that have been in a competitive environment for many years all of a sudden coming together under this with this intention of making this message that you can't just kill a journalist and get away with it. And so as a result of that, there's been plenty of support from the philanthropic community, like the James Knight Foundation, the California Endowment. We also got assistance from, as I mentioned, students from the Graduate School of Journalism at UC Berkeley, San Francisco State University, the Society of Professional Journalists, the SDX Foundation, and a host of many others that have helped support, pay in part some of the salaries of the freelance reporters that have been involved. We've also had KTVU Channel 2, also KQED as well. So the list goes on and on. And I think in many ways you could argue that it wasn't put together because, for instance, the Oakland Tribune, which was asked to sort of spearhead this thing, didn't have the economic resources to carry on an investigation like this. But it was done. But I think going forward in these difficult economic times for journalism organizations, you could argue that it could be a model for investigative reporting to continue on and to be robust so that competition isn't necessarily at the forefront. If there's a great important issue, traditionally competing news organizations can come together and say, we're going to do this collectively because it's about the story.
Thomas Peel, you want to add to that?
Well, I just want to say that we've put together an investigative team that has, in my estimation, done some outstanding work. And the lion's share of that credit goes to reporters who came together to work on this. My colleague Bob Butler, who was a radio reporter for years at KCBS, Mary Fricker, a retired reporter from the Santa Rosa Press-Democrat, A.C. Thompson, formerly of SF Weekly and the Bay Guardian, who is now at ProPublica in New York, worked on the project.
Have any of these folks that we've been praising been threatened? Have there been any problems?
We've had no threats. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have some concerns, but none of us have received any threats in working on this, no.
We've got a lot of emails, and we don't have time for them, but I'll ask one real quickly. Please ask if any politicians who endorsed Bay and the Temple are left on the council in Oakland. Does Temple still have power politically? And what happens to this case? Why don't you take that, Thomas Peel, just for a few seconds before we're out of here.
Well, what happens to the case is that Yusef Bey IV and Antoine Mackey have been indicted for 3 murders each, and that case will now be adjudicated. City Council is, quite frankly, running for cover on this issue. They're not saying much.
Okay. What we did, we said a lot. I really thank you all very much. Fascinating discussion. Thomas Peel of the Bay Area News Group, Martin Reynolds of the Oakland Tribune, Peter Keene, Golden Gate Law School. Interesting discussion of Chauncey Bailey. We will watch developments. You've been listening to Forum on KQED-FM. I'm Spencer Michaels. Thanks very much.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.